Again, that's Hip Hop Past, Present, and Future and Your Place in It with Mike Crenshaw on Saturday, January 27th at 4 p.m. at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol, let's just scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
To Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Jesselyn Hagenjoss. Her paintings Cascades are on now at the Russo Lee Gallery through January 27th. Thanks for being on KBOO, Jesselyn.
Thank you so much, Joseph, for having me.
I should say Jesselyn is in Mexico right now, and I'm in KBOO studio. We are doing this by phone, but I wanted to ask Jesselyn, what you're doing in Mexico?
In Mexico, my husband and I decided to take a sabbatical about 9 years ago and drive through the country of Mexico from San Francisco, where we were living at the time. We took about an 8-month sabbatical. I had finished grad school. And we got in our car, put our huge dog in the back, and drove through Mexico for about 8 months. And we found this weird little fishing town called Barra de Navidad in the state of Jalisco on the Pacific Ocean in Mexico. And we've been returning pretty religiously for a couple months every year.
So it's a winter place for you.
It is, yes. A winter place. I have a small studio here. My husband works from here. And we... just make this our winter getaway, both when we just moved back to Portland from San Francisco, and now we really need it just to escape the rain of the Northwest.
Okay, good move, because it's raining today.
Yes.
So your paintings, Cascades, mm-hmm. they're very much about Oregon. You're from Oregon, but you lived in the Bay Area. I should describe them as they're kind of poured paintings. Is that right? You work horizontally and you pour the acrylic onto the surface.
I do, yes. They're very physical paintings, meaning that the body's really involved in the process of creating these works. And most of these paintings, they've all been created in the Northwest and in my studio in Portland. And they're all referencing different geological formations of the Cascade Mountain Range.
And I should tell the listeners they're not gray. They are beautifully colored. These are brightly colored, shiny. In many cases, the acrylic is very glossy. The liquids have sort of pooled together. There are places where you've cut through, so there are hard edges. And then many of them are on a brightly colored background, you know, so they really contrast. So tell us about, there's one, they're in the office at Russo Lee, which is the smaller room. And there's one called Double Peak Sunrise, which it looks like, looks like a sort of like a mountain range, but it's very abstract in that sense. There's a yellow background. There's a sort of...
Right.
Gray streak across the main mountain. There's brown. It's just parts of it are marbled, like the two colors have mixed as a liquid to make a marbled effect. And it's kind of dramatic, but it's called a sunrise. So what's going on, and where are these two peaks?
These are the North Cascade Mountain Ridge, and this is a really a mix of both the natural landscape and this idea of these fabricated through me new landforms that I'm creating in the studio. So I take the reference from the actual mountain range, go visit, spend time, try to find different formations of rocks, boulders, you know, the beautiful cliffs on mountains. I've you know, spent a lot of time in nature and want to try to recreate these in a very abstracted, painterly way, where it's very both physical with the paint, the movement of paint, and also the building of these new plastic forms of mountains, you know, from these very plastic acrylic paints and with these candy-colored colors that change the idea of the mountain landscape completely, really.
So when you go out doing, do you count it as research? If you go out into the Cascades, are you backpacking, day hiking, you know, you taking photos, drawing? How do you do it?
Yeah, they're all, you know, day trips. I'm not a great backpacker, but a lot of day trips, a lot of photographs. And then I come back into the studio and start sketching and making small paintings on paper that then inform the painting, the larger paintings, the big pours that I start in studio. And I also take a lot of these images back even with me to Mexico and start the process there, making small works on paper that I can then bring back to the studio. And I'll have about 8 or 9 months to start creating these paintings that are all referencing different geological formations that I've found interesting, that somehow speak both to the man-made landscape that I live in and allow me to exist in the natural landscape that I find myself in.
Do you, when you're looking at a landscape, do you go above the tree line? Is the idea to just see the basic features of mountains?
Exactly. And the same with, there's a couple other paintings, the Live Earth series and Earth series number 4, which are more of the Balance Rock series. So it's, you know, thinking about the striations in the rock of what exists if you pulled back the surface of it too. And some of my earlier work in the, a few years ago, I was looking into Superfund sites, which, are you familiar with Superfund sites, Joseph? I don't know.
Yeah, places that are so polluted, the federal government is trying to clean them up.
Exactly. My stepmom worked for 40 years in the Fish and Wildlife Service, and I ended up, you know, getting a lot of this information from her, and also living on a Superfund site in Seattle, Washington, called right across the street from Gas Works Park. If you're familiar with the Seattle area at all, it's a beautiful park, but there are all these signs all over saying not to eat food on the park, to wash your hands immediately after leaving the park, and that this idea of what lives underneath the ground started becoming part of my process and my, you know, piquing my curiosity. And so that started to, even now when I'm looking at these mountain ranges, I'm still kind of pulling back the layer of the mountain and thinking about the striations, what exists underneath. A little bit of the idea of mountaintop removal, you know, comes back into this. So there's a little, there's this idea of both the landform in its natural state, and then how man has manipulated it, or, you know, just the process of pollution and environmental issues kind of seep back into the work a little bit in the conceptual side of the work.
So something like Earth Series number 3, that this is, it looks like 4 rocks. You know how people pile rocks up in pretty patterns to, it's, you know, it's either a cairn or it's like a balancing act.
Yeah, the balance rocks.
Oh, is that, these are done, I thought they were done by hikers as a sort of, you know, little sculpture, little Andy Goldsworthy fun.
Yes, they are. They do occur in nature every now and then, not quite to this level. These were actually set up by hikers that I found along the pathways. But then I also became, you know, really intrigued by these beautiful, just these sculptures that hikers or people would spend time trying to balance, and piqued my curiosity. And I wanted to see what happened when I started to try to layer these paints in a geological formation like the Balance Rocks, which is really, it's really not easy to, you know, kind of stop the paint from flowing into the next rock. You know, there's a little bit of that same process of balancing both in the creation and the paint pour as it is in balancing the rocks in nature.
So Earth Series number 3, it has a flat lavender background, and then you have these rocks. I think the bottom one is very, has many layers within it. So there's gray, purple, blue, you know, mixed up. Are you taking the idea of, you know, the layers of rocks and sort of projecting them onto little stones that people pile up, or are you saying they were visible at the time, those layers.
No, I am saying that I, through the abstraction of painting, create these rocks to look like this. The rocks did not look like this at all. But if you think about the, you know, just taking geology courses in college and whatnot, just thinking about the striations of the Earth's crust and how rocks form and the different, you know, compositions of these minerals, you know, that starts to inform the way that I apply the paint in the pores so that you get these striations and you get this almost geode effect in these rocks that I'm creating.
Yeah. How do you come up with these backgrounds? These are, you know, aqua in one case, yellow in the case of Ridge 2007. How do you come up with these, you know, you said they're candy colors.
Right. Just, you know, playing, I mean, a lot of it is informed by the moment of the painting and sitting down and thinking about color when I, you know, remove it from the actual landscape and just start thinking about, you know, colors that interest me, color compositions that interest me, that I get excited about, that that I feel during the day, or, you know, I let it be a little intuitive, thinking about color in a playful way, trying to create something that I find joy in and colors that I find speak to each other and then speak to me.
Right. But is it all about contrast?
It's about contrast and about, yes, it's about contrast. So the background, you know, I want to create these very flat backgrounds where then when I use the very glossy or matte paint, you know, with the acrylic, the syrupy context of the pour that I'm building on top of it, I want it to push to the foreground so that the flat background becomes a space that holds it.
Yeah. So you, you use, syrupy is a good word because some of these layers are, they stand up off the surface. They're so curved.
Right.
You know, they're like a liquid that is set, a viscous liquid. And then there are other bits of paint within the rocks or within the body, not the background, that are, you know, flatter. So how do you get those variations?
Well, the process of the paintings take, you know, probably about a month, just the allowing, you know, starting with the background, creating this background color, and then I tape off sections and start building these paint pours. And each paint pour is a layer and it takes a couple days to dry, and then I can go back into it and start adding different striations, different color choices. You know, if I want it high gloss, if I want it matte, it just depends on the amount of medium that I use. So it becomes a little bit of a chemistry experiment in the studio. It gets a little messy and juicy at times.
So there's a piece called Slice Number 3, which is, I think, is it like geode? It's a rock, presumably, that has been sliced in cross-section. And inside, it's kind of, it looks like an oyster in a way, and it has layers and layers of sort of pink, different pinks, a yellow, and then black. There are black and dark red dividing lines. Was it a geode originally?
It was a geode originally, yep. And it's going back in. You know, I'm actually looking at the geode while I'm making this and trying to get the paint to move and flow and react with each other in this way to kind of make the striations that you find when you know, crack open a geode and you find this treasure, of almost this magical treasure on the inside, and trying to recreate that with these, you know, beautiful plastic paints and these colors that really existed in the geode too. They were these, you know, maybe not as heightened as I choose to push them in the abstraction of it, but trying to recreate them in this painting of a geode.
And this slice one, it has a gray background and a dark gray shadow underneath. I think it's meant to be a shadow, right? It's a triangle. Why did you put the triangle in, the shadow?
Well, you know, I wanted to ground it. Sometimes I enjoy seeing them float in space completely, where they are completely separate from their natural position in life. You know, like normally sitting on a table. And this one, I wanted the gray to still float around it, but to then have the levity of this shadow underneath it so that there's this sharp contrast.
Right. Why did you go with these colors, these pinks?
The pinks, you know, I was also at the same time I'm looking at the geodes, I have also been looking at a lot of glacier, you know, real life glaciers, just a little bit obsessed with that. And for some reason, the glaciers that I was looking at the time were these beautiful grays and pinks in the sunlight, you know, in the early morning. And then it just, when I, you know, opened the geode and see these pinks and these, you know, kind of magical little sun reflections inside the crystallization of the geode, it spoke to me of the same ideas of as the glacier, and they kind of merged and became this painting.
Mm-hmm. Where did you get your geode?
Well, my sister and I have been collecting them forever, and my dad used to take trips and bring home rocks and geodes for us when we were kids, and I've got some of those, and there's a couple stores in Portland that I frequent, and some are images that I've had forever, and so I have both, you know, images of books and then some real-life geodes, and I kind of go back and forth between those. I did a, you know, extensive series of geodes a couple years ago that... that I had to finally start going into books and pictures and looking into it that way, because I was obsessed with them and making unlimited amounts of paintings.
So you're not above going to a tourist store and buying one?
Oh, no. I think that's part of the process. I find such pleasure in finding a tourist store and finding these little beautiful pockets of rocks. I'm obsessed with rocks, so I'm always playing with the rocks. You know, I buy rocks for presents for my friends' kids. Hopefully they like them too. But the rocks I think are beautiful. I love seeing them in stores. There's a couple kids on Hawthorne that sell, you know, rocks and crystals right on my street. So I get to kind of peruse those every morning too.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Jesselyn Hagen-Jose. Her show Cascades is on now in the office section of the Russo Lee Gallery on Northwest 21st Avenue, and it's up through January 27th. So, Jesselyn, you tell us a bit more about how you managed to do research in the Cascades and yet do a lot of work in Mexico. Do you use Mexico as the place to get on with the painting? And everything else is research, or how does it work?
Yeah, Mexico becomes a place where I get to change my perspective, if that makes any sense. I get to start the process in, you know, my studio space where I actually make the large work. Mexico, unfortunately, doesn't really have a great mail system, so sending back large paintings, you would never know if you would get them or not. That's the same with getting supplies. There's no real art supply stores that I've found, even in my travels, that will supply the type of paint I need. I should say there are art supply stores, of course, that supply the type of paint I need while in Mexico, even Mexico City, which I've spent some time in San Miguel de Allende.
What town are you in now? You know, where do you go in the winter? What state is it in?
Yeah, it's in Jalisco, so it's about a four-hour drive south of Puerto Vallarta. It's a really small little fishing village called Barra de Navidad, and it's about 3,000 people, a mix of both expats and, you know, an amazing, thriving Mexican community, mostly fishermen and a little bit of tourism. And it's just this kind of oasis where my perspective gets to change from my studio practice on at home in the States to this kind of simple life. I mean, there's no Amazon. There's, as you can see, it's hard to even produce, you know, with internet to make sure that all the production that I need in the off season is kind of taken care of. And the internet's slow here. It's just kind of this simple way of life. We live right on the ocean. I make small paintings on paper using watercolor, gouache, and acrylic. And I bring that with me. I try to make, you know, a painting a day while I'm here. Small works on paper, take them back to the studio when I get home in Portland, and put them up on my wall and let that inform my larger works. And that's, you know, a bit of trial and error. It doesn't always translate from the light in Mexico, you know, with the aquamarine of the ocean and the brightness of the sky, these saturated colors that I find here, trying to translate them more into the rock and the geological formations that I'm looking at in the Northwest. So it's a really fun juxtaposition of both the natural space in the Northwest, which is so green and lush and gray and blue, but with these heightened colors that that kind of informed the paintings also through my stay in Mexico.
Is the local palettes for, you know, murals and pottery mm-hmm. and art you'd see in a bar, is that the saturated colors that you've been using?
Exactly. Yep. The coffee shop that I go to every day, my now dear friend, she owns this coffee shop, and the inside of her coffee shop is the color of the North Cascades painting that's at the gallery right now. And for some reason, you know, I got home and this painting, this small painting, had already, you know, been worked out, and it worked perfectly in translation. And it, you know, even though it was of the North Cascades, these colors from Mexico kind of find their way into the final product of the painting, which is a really fun process for me. I get to use both my time there and in the Portland area to create these combined works.
Well, it's very refreshing because, you know, we're used to James Lavador paintings where he's using right. streaking and you know, pieces of wood to create these striations. But he uses a kind of a brown and gray and green palette. And we used the Terry Todemeyer photography of this sort of majestic, you know, basalt of the whole Cascades, but it's black and white. So how do you feel about bringing bright colors to this normally gray subject matter?
I find it fascinating. I find it part of the reason that I continue to make work, you know, to skew my perception. It's all about the problems and the process in the studio, what gets me excited about color. And, you know, I've gone through my process of creating an entire, you know, series of using grays and neutrals. I've done that. I've enjoyed it, especially when I was living in San Francisco, which is so funny. Most of my work was very neutral, very gray.
Was it landscape-based when you're working in the Bay Area, that work?
It was, yes. Yep, very similar work, different regions. I was using a little bit more of a science fiction feel with my geology there. So they were imagined rock formations, imagined spaces floating through space. And, you know, this idea of manifest destiny, of the picturesque, this ideal landscape completely fabricated by me, floating in nothingness. And then when I moved to Portland again, it translated. I mean, we just have such a beautiful landscape in front of us in Portland too, with the mountains and the ridges and the gorge. I just feel so lucky and privileged to live there again that I got back into looking at natural landscapes and then mutating them and changing them with the abstraction of paint and plastic paint.
So this piece, North Cascades, this is the one with the aqua background. There are colors in there that look like flesh. There's purple, white, mm-hmm. And then there's the things that really strike me are the bleeding, you know, where the two colors are sort of fighting each other in an organic manner. How do you attain that effect, and how do you not overuse it, because you use it sparingly?
Right, you have to be careful. It is. You know, with this process of pouring, I got to do a residency at the Golden Foundation, which is, they make artist acrylic paint and oils, but for me, they are artist acrylic. I was using enamel before I did this residency and was awarded the residency and lived up there on their, where they actually manufacture the paint, for a month in upstate New York a couple of years ago, and got to work with the technicians, the actual paint manufacturers, to come up with different mediums and different ways for me to get the enamel process that I was looking for in acrylic, so that they were less noxious, less toxic actually to work with. And then just through the process of playing, you know, the chemistry side of paint, I started finding these natural accidents that would happen between using, you know, different types of materials. Airbrush paints mixed with heavy acrylics, mixed with mediums of GAC and different, you know, additives that you can add into paint to extend them, to change them. And this was part of just that pleasure of creation again. You know, I'm making these rocks and these formations, and then inside of them I get to explore what happens when paint interacts with itself and the consistency changes, and there are these accidents that happen that become, you know, so beautiful and so much more important than where I was hoping it would go. So allowing that to emerge through the process and then making sure I don't overdo it, and then try and then recreating them where I need them. And you don't absolutely know what this is going to look like until it dries. And that's part of the discovery of doing these pour paintings, where it's not a brush manipulating it necessarily. It's you know, the movement of paint, lifting up the panel, pushing the paint to one side, dragging it across the other. And then you don't know what it will look like and what the finished chemical reaction will be until it dries completely.
What do you pour from? What kind of container?
Right. I pour from small plastic cups. And so, you know, just the small party cups that you would get. I used to use larger red party cups, but now that I found these beautiful acrylics in this medium instead of the enamels, I can really, really create the colors that I want. So I can be, you know, I make these small party cups. I fill them with the material of the medium and mix them with fluid acrylics and create these beautiful colors. And then I pour from those. And I stand above the panel and the painting and pour above it, letting it drip onto it, and then move it. And sometimes I do have to get larger, you know, buckets to hit larger areas. But I try to, you know, have four or five cups of the same color at all times so that I can go back in, you know, over and over and over, layer after layer.
And is the panel, it's a wooden panel, right? Is it above a table, or is it just you just holding it?
No, it's on a table. I have a large wood table in the middle of my studio that I can access, you know, 360 degrees around it. And then the panel goes on top of that, lays flat, and then I you know, have a mixing tray next to me and a couple other movable tables around me. And I just start pouring, moving, lifting up the corners of the panel. Sometimes I'll, you know, let that completely drip off the edges so that the paint moves completely off the panel. And then you let that dry, and then you do it again and over and over. And that's why I have to tape, because otherwise there would be no crisp line in these paintings.
So you have this system where you understand the mm-hmm. colors and the chemistry, and you have a subject matter which is very semi-abstract, you know, landscape. Have you taken all of what you know and done a 180 and tried to do other shapes, like human figures or faces or anything else?
I did, and when I started this process of the pour, I mean, back in the, you know, before I went to grad school, I was doing portrait work. I was doing pet portraits. You know, I was very figurative, very narrative work, and then it moved into these more geological formations. And when I started these pours, I was doing representational spaces, actually pouring these little landscapes and then going back inside of them and illustrating them, really. So there were like tight edges, there were brush strokes involved still, and then it's merged and changed and mutated and abstracted into these, you know, luscious forms. I've done a couple portrait paintings with this, but for some reason I'm not moved to that. I'm really moved to these geological forms, these that allow me to build without having to replicate it exactly, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I think the listeners should know these are really beautiful works. They're very seductive to the eye. You could spend a lot of time just staring at them, let alone knowing, you know, what they're about or how they're made.
So right.
I think you really hit on something right now, Jesselyn.
Oh, thank you, Joseph. Yeah, it's been a wonderful exploration, and every time I'm in my studio, both here in Mexico and in Portland, I feel really lucky to get the chance to enjoy the process of making work.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Jesselyn Hagenjoss. Her show Cascades is on now at the Russo Lee Gallery through January 27th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Jesselyn.
Thank you so much for having me, Joseph. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Hello, KBOO listeners. The time is 11:58, almost 59. So we're just finishing up the morning hour. Stick around because we have our Spanish language programming coming up in just a moment after these announcements. Tanya Gomez Daza will be here with you with Buscando America. Have a great day. You're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Thirsty City, a monthly beat and rap night at The Know in Portland. On Saturday, January 27th, Thirsty City hosts the launch party for their new label and cassette release featuring 29 beat instrumentalists from Portland and Munich. The release party also features live sets by Bry Zen, Two North, and more. Again, that's Thirsty City at The Know, 3728 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 28th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from February 2nd through March 3rd. The Cascade Festival of African Films shows us Africa through the eyes of Africans, rather than a vision of Africa packaged for Western viewers. The films represent different countries and cultures and a range of lifestyles from pre-colonial to modern times, including both rural and urban settings. Films include 76 and The Footprints of Pan-Africanism and more at the Hollywood Theater, and The African Who Wanted to Fly, Foreign Bodies, Wulu, and many more at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Room 104 at the PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 20th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from February 2nd through March 3rd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Esto es Tania Gómez Daza para KBOO News. A continuación, un corte informativo en español.